So reading the verse again. Nakula and Sahadev, the younger brothers of the king, and also Satyaki, Arjuna, the personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, the son of Devaki, and the ladies and others, all unanimously agreed with the king. So what's going on here at this point? Can anyone summarize where we are up to this point? So now everyone's agreeing. Basically now everyone's agreeing with Draupadi. Because the king has agreed with Draupadi. And now even Arjuna and Krishna, those who at first wanted to just kill him, now they're all agreeing with Yudhisthira, who's agreeing with Draupadi. Right?
Yes. Well, Arjuna doesn't actually agree yet. He's sort of still bewildered, isn't he? Because he doesn't quite know what his duty is yet.
Well, at least in this verse it says...
Because that's what it says, though. Arjuna,
it says Arjuna and Krishna also agreed, and all the ladies.
They already agreed.
Yeah, everybody agreed.
Not everyone, though. Now the next verse. Bhima, however, disagreed with them and recommended killing this culprit, who, in an angry mood, had murdered sleeping children for no purpose, and for neither his nor his master's interest. So, not everyone's agreeing. Bhima's not agreeing. And the next verse, Chaturbhuja, the four-armed one, or the personality of Godhead, after hearing the words of Bhima, Draupadi, and others, saw the face of his dear friend Arjuna, and he began to speak, as if smiling. So, I guess Vaisheshika Prabhu was, he was anticipating Arjuna's face here. It's interesting, Krishna here is standing in a forearm form. So he's in a Vishnu form in this situation.
Is that correct?
So Chaturbhuja.
But isn't that a way of calling him? Another name?
Oh.
Krishna? I don't think
purport explains it.
Oh. Okay. Purport. Lord Sri Krishna had two arms, and why he is designated as four-armed is explained by Sridhar Swami.
Yeah.
Both Bhima and Draupadi held opposite views about killing Ashwatthama. Bhima wanted him to be immediately killed, whereas Draupadi wanted to save him. We can imagine Bhima ready to kill while Draupadi is obstructing him. And in order to prevent both of them, the Lord discovered another two arms. Originally, the primeval Lord, Sri Krishna, displayed only his two arms, but in his Narayan feature, he exhibited four. In his Narayan feature, he resides with his devotees in the Vaikuntha planets, while in his original Sri Krishna feature, he resides in the Krishna Loka planet, far, far above the Vaikuntha planets in the spiritual sky. Therefore, if Sri Krishna is called Chaturbhuja, there is no contradiction. If need be, he can display hundreds of arms, as exhibited in his Vishwarupa shown to Arjuna. Therefore, one who can display hundreds and thousands of arms can also manifest four whenever needed. When Arjuna was perplexed about what to do with Ashwatthama, Lord Sri Krishna, as the very dear friend of Arjuna, voluntarily took up the matter just to make a solution. And he was smiling also. So, that's the answer to the question. Why is Krishna described here with four arms? So, describing the scene here, Prabhupada says we can imagine that in Bhima, he's a passionate fella, right? And he's angry and he's ready to rip the head off Ashwatthama. And Draupadi's saying, no, no, let's don't kill him. And he's saying, yes, yes, let's kill him. So Krishna mercifully jumped in between them and used two arms to stop Draupadi and two arms to stop Bhima. And at the same time, Arjuna's perplexed now. Now what are we going to do? Bhima wants to kill him. Really, I'd like to kill him too. And everyone else is saying, no, don't kill him. And now Krishna is going to mercifully come up with a solution. When previously on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, the last time Krishna was smiling at Arjuna, he was kind of smirking at him, really. Because Arjuna's, he's on the battlefield, the battle's just about to begin. He picks up his bow, and he says, well, before I shoot my arrow, let's see who's here on the battle. And then he asked Arjuna, bring my chariot into a location where I can actually observe and see who's really come here to fight. And Krishna brings him over to a good location where he can actually see, and Krishna says to him with a smiling face, just behold all the crew is here, anticipating Arjuna's bewilderment, thinking, okay, you want to see who's here? Have a look. Now what are you going to do? And of course Arjuna becomes bewildered, and Krishna therefore instructs him and kind of guides him out of his predicament. But in this case, Krishna, it sounds like he's going to come up with the solution right away. He's not going to let the burden fall on Arjuna. Arjuna's not going to have to figure it out, but Krishna's going to come up with a solution. I kind of forget the story, but Krishna, he ends up figuring out a way to kill him, but not kill him, right?
It's actually Arjuna figures it out, but it's because they're so close that Krishna just looks at him, and because of his look, Arjuna understands. It's like two friends; they're so close. You know, they look and go like, you know, just like that. You know everything, right? So that's what happens in the next verse, because Krishna looks at him and he's like, kind of, you know, whatever it is by the expression of his face or whatever, Arjuna understands his intention. Kind of like how close they are, and then he figures it out what Krishna has in mind. So it's kind of like simultaneously, like, you know, he didn't say anything though.
The other interesting point I find in this verse is the forearm part. That Krishna, he's really manifesting his form according to the relationship he has with the devotees present. Right. So his original form is a two-arm form, and this is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita near the end, in the 18th chapter, in the 11th chapter, where he exhibits his universal form. Then Arjuna requests to see his forearm form. And then it mentions that he reverts back into his original two-arm form. And then Krishna explains that this form is very, very dear, that one actually even can't even see this form by worship, not by study of the Vedas, not by penances, not even by worship can one have a chance to see this two-arm form. And the demigods also are anxious to see this two-arm form. So it's not even by worship, it's only by pure devotion, pure love. And those devotees who have such love for the personality of Godhead, really, that they forget that he's God. So in that two-arm form, there isn't this on reverence. There's no Aishvarya. They go beyond that. And this is where the Gaudiya Vaishnavism leaves others in the dust, you could say. That and other religions, that most people don't have this this conception of God, that one can actually love God so much that one forgets God is God, and then enter into an intimate personal relationship with God. It's inconceivable. And it's not even talked about. It's not even known in most cases. Even if one studies the Vedas, one won't learn about this kind of relationship. And even if one hears about it, but worships the Lord in awe and reverence, one won't see this kind of form. One won't be able to enter into this kind of relationship with the Lord. So that's the special gift of Lord Chaitanya in this age. That's why he's called the most munificent incarnation, because within the Hare Krishna mantra, he's woven this prema. And whoever chants the Hare Krishna mantra and enters into this disciplic succession and actually begins to cultivate this relationship with the Lord by the mercy of Krishna Swarup Shakti, Radharani, can be benedicted, and one can awaken this kind of relationship with the Lord, where the Lord is so attracted to the devotee's love that he cannot resist reciprocating with the devotee in an intimate fashion. There's one story in the Krishna book that demonstrates this fact. When the gopis were searching for Krishna after he left the rasa dance, and he was trying to hide from them, so he manifested the form of Narayan, right? And the gopis were wandering around, and they see Narayan, and they said, "Oh, Narayan, you know, have you seen Krishna?" But because Krishna was in the presence, really, of the gopis, and he was sensing their intense love for him, he almost couldn't maintain that form anymore, right? They almost forced him to give up that form and exhibit his two-arm form because of their love. And so when a devotee has so much love for the Lord, according to the devotee's love, then the Lord reciprocates. And so the devotees that are here present at the trial of Ashwatthama, they are mostly all devotees from Dwarka, and where Krishna is acting as a great king, and the relationships are sort of mixed Aishwarya and friendship, just like Arjuna has kind of a mixed friendship with sometimes viewing Krishna in very much awe, and then sometimes as a friend where he forgets he is the Lord, and later on he's begging for, "Please forgive me for my offenses because I treated you like a friend, and we laid on the same bed together and we were joking." So the relationship goes back and forth. So here in this assembly, Krishna's manifesting his Godhead form, his great form, his form of greatness, his four-arm form, and sometimes he's manifesting his two-arm form. But there's no contradiction, because these devotees, they can adjust to both of these forms because of their relationship with him. And otherwise, they wouldn't be seeing Krishna in this particular fashion. So that's a really fascinating aspect of Krishna theology.
It also says here in the purport that he manifests his four-arm form in the Vaikuntha planets, but two-arm in Krishna Loka. So is there a difference in relationship that's going on between the two planets? Is this that there is lesser, closer contact or love in Vaikuntha than there is in Krishna Loka?
Well, yeah, that's how it's described to us, that in the Vaikuntha Lokas, the relationship is one of awe and reverence. And with a few exceptions, most of the relationships are in servitude or in neutrality, where one is simply awed by the greatness of the Lord, maybe even fearful, very. I mean, I was reading this. Even in relationships in this material world, sometimes we feel that way, or even in our spiritual relationships, we can feel that way. I was reading one story last night that Shruti Kirti was relating. Generally, his relationship with Srila Prabhupada was strictly servant and master, and he tried very hard to maintain that relationship and not become offensive, which was very difficult if you were with Srila Prabhupada day in and day out. I remember Shruti Kirti told me a story one time that when he used to massage Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada, of course, used to get his noonday massage before he took bath and said Gayatri, but he also would often get an evening massage and be massaged to sleep. And sometimes Shruti Kirti would be massaging Srila Prabhupada and Srila Prabhupada would fall asleep. And one could not stop, could not leave Srila Prabhupada, no matter what one was doing, whether he brought him prasadam or whether one was massaging him, until Srila Prabhupada said, okay, you can go now. So sometimes it would be late at night and Shruti Kirti said he would purposely massage Prabhupada kind of hard to wake him up so that Prabhupada would say, okay, you can go now. So it was very difficult, you know, to be there simply for Srila Prabhupada's pleasure and service. In the same way, it's very difficult to be there for Krishna, just for Krishna's pleasure. And so, but Shruti Kirti, he very much tried to maintain that attitude. But he said, sometimes Srila Prabhupada just wanted to deal with him on a friendly level, and he wanted reciprocation like that. So he said, one time they got on an airplane, I think they were flying to Australia, and the music comes on. You know how the music comes on when you're going to take the flight, and they try and create this glamorous kind of mood. So some nice classical music came on the air. And Shruti Kirti was thinking, oh, this is nice music, I like this. And Srila Prabhupada looked over at Shruti Kirti, and he smiled and he said, isn't this nice music? And Shruti Kirti, he began to examine his mind in the process, and he didn't want to admit to Prabhupada that he thought that something mundane was nice. So he didn't make any comment. And he was thinking, well, it didn't have anything to do with Krishna, and therefore I better not say anything. So later on, again, Prabhupada smiled at Shruti Kirti and he said, isn't this music's kind of nice, isn't it? And then finally Shruti Kirti said, yeah, Srila Prabhupada, this is nice music. But you know, Prabhupada was just in a relaxed atmosphere and he just wanted to socialize and be on kind of a friendly level, but Shruti Kirti was trying to maintain this master-servant relationship. But Prabhupada kind of brought him out of it with his love and affection. And just Prabhupada had a way of making feeling, even although his presence was very, very intimidating for his disciples, Prabhupada had a way of making one feel very relaxed and very friendly. And I had a similar experience. Of course, the first time I talked to Srila Prabhupada, I didn't really know him, but in my very first experiences of him, I learned that on reverence mood, and I felt that when I first saw him. I just bowed down, didn't even know about bowing down, but something in my heart told me to bow down, and I bowed down, and I felt good about it, even though I was a Westerner. I kind of relished bowing down before my master. It was a nice feeling. And I'm sure the residents in Vaikuntha also enjoy that rasa of Krishna being very great and bowing down and feeling the security and that kind of comfort in his presence. And I felt the same way when I first time I saw Srila Prabhupada. And then I saw that the next day the devotees, they made a big offense to Srila Prabhupada and they didn't worship him properly. It was the Vyas Puj day, and it was a total failure. And I saw the mood of awe and reverence. The devotees were all crying. They were apologizing to Srila Prabhupada. It wasn't, you know, a friendly atmosphere. But it was that mood of awe and reverence, where the devotees had made a slight mistake. Well, it was a big mistake, but they didn't worship the representative of God properly. And so that was a big offense. And then when Prabhupada left, the mood was dejected and everyone was suffering and crying. And then the next day Prabhupada came back and then they worshipped him properly and there was a great feast and everything was fine and dandy again. So that was my first experience of Srila Prabhupada and the relationship of servant and master, or Lord the Great and the Jiva, the servant. Then the next, a few days after that, Prabhupada was leaving and we went to the airport to see him off. And when he was in the VIP lounge, he was sitting down and the devotees were congregated around him. And then he motioned me over to sit next to him. Sitting right next to him on the seat like a friend, you know. I was sitting on the same seat with Srila Prabhupada. And all the devotees were sitting down below. I mean, he said, come sit here. And so my first experience was awe and reverence, but here I am sitting next to him. So I was petrified, you know, sitting in front of all the devotees. And then so he, you know, looked at me in a very kind, loving eyes and a very soft voice. And he says, so, you know, where do your parents think about Krishna consciousness? And asked me very simple, nice, friendly questions. And immediately I felt relaxed. Even though before I felt very intimidated, now I felt like I'm sitting next to my father in a very friendly mood. And he said, what do your parents think about Krishna consciousness? And I said, well, they don't know anything about Krishna consciousness yet, Srila Prabhupada. I haven't told them that I'm a devotee yet. And they didn't know. They were back in America and I was in Japan. And then he said, well, so do you like chanting Hare Krishna? You know? That's not a very difficult question to answer, right? So it was very easy. I said, oh yes, I like chanting very much. And then he said, oh, very good. If you always chant, you'll always be happy. But then the mood and the voice became very, very serious. And those words were very, very penetrating. And then I got up and sat down with the rest of the devotees and there was kirtan and then Srila Prabhupada left. But I was just noticing how those moods are there, you know, with the spiritual master and also with Krishna. And if I was just too petrified, right, maybe I wouldn't have gotten up and sat next to Srila Prabhupada. And maybe I just would have kept my head down on the floor and never lifted it up. So you can see how there are different relationships with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and according to our mood, you know, the Lord will reciprocate with us. Yayatam mam prapadyante tamsta chaiva bhajamyaham mamavartmar navartante manusha partha sarvasaha. As one reciprocates with me, I reward accordingly. Right, give myself in that way. And so in the Vaikuntha planets, the mood is one of awe and reverence and servitude. And when the Lord is exhibiting this greatness, it's just, how else can one react but simply out of fear to bow down? Wow, I better not make a mistake. But in that mood, in that atmosphere, there can't be other kinds of reciprocation. It's just not possible. But when the Lord, when the devotee's love goes beyond that for the pleasure of the Lord, then the Lord begins to manifest in a more intimate way. I was just thinking, like even in the case of Prahlad Maharaj, where the Lord is exhibiting such a fierce form that everyone is shaking, the demigods are shaking, even Lakshmi's holding back, no one can pacify him, but little Prahlad, he had absolutely no fear of the Lord, even in such a ferocious form. Then the Lord was pacified with his prayers, and he's touching Prahlad with his hand on his head, and his mood is, actually, the Lord's mood was controlled by the love of Prahlad Maharaj. So, in the spiritual world, the relationship with